Good morning, Tony. Good to be back.
Yes, great to have you back on the programme. The Perseid meteor showers, I think we made reference to these about a month ago, but they come to what can only be described, I think, of as a bit of a crescendo in August, don't they?
Well, they actually come to a crescendo a number of times throughout the year, Tony, but this year it could be a particularly good one in August because the moon's out the way, and if the moon's out the way, then the skies are darker and we can see a lot more. So I think a lot of astronomers, a lot of amateur astronomers are really looking forward to this particular meteor shower because it's normally a good one anyway. You can expect to see a lot more activity normally. But if the moon's around, obviously, as I say, it spoils the view. We like the moon, but not all the time. But the moon's going to be out of the way this year, so it could be good. We can have dark skies. We need some clear skies, some good weather. But weather permitting, we could be in for a bit of a show.
What makes the Perseid meteor showers different from other meteor showers?
Let's backtrack a little bit, Tony, and for those of your listeners who may not know what a meteor shower is, I'm sure everyone is aware of shooting stars, those bright sort of vaporizing trails in the night sky that you can see every night on a clear night. And that's where it's where dust particles hit the upper atmosphere of Earth and vaporize, and that's what we call meteors or shooting stars, also known as shooting stars. So it's just dust vaporizing in the atmosphere, and it happens all the time. And actually, you can expect to see twice as many shooting stars after midnight as you can before. And that's because Earth's rotation puts where you are on the planet in sort of the leading edge, so you're getting hit a lot more by that dust.
So we've all got to stay up a bit later.
Sorry?
So we've all got to stay up a little later.
Yes, you definitely have. But I think it'll be worth it this year, Tony. So that's why it could be a good one. So what happens, of course, a meteor shower, so a shower of meteors, a shower of shooting stars, happens when Earth passes through the dust that has been spread around the orbit of a comet. So in this case, it's Comet 109P Swift Tuttle. Your listeners don't need to remember
that's
that.
A quality
so
name.
What happens is it's a comet that it has what we call an orbital period. So its loop takes 133 years. It loops around the sun, back out again, and Earth. It leaves a trail behind it because it's, you know, it has a tail. It's passed by the sun. Its surface, the head, the coma, as we call it, is vaporizing. It's leaving dust and debris behind it. And that stays there. So effectively, there's like a loop in the solar system. And at a particular time every year, Earth passes through that legacy loop of dirt and dust. So there's a lot of dirt and dust in there. And as a result of that, a lot of dirt and dust is going to hit our upper atmosphere, and it's going to cause a lot more shooting stars. And that's what a meteor shower is. So on the nights of the 12th, 13th and 13th and 14th of August, our planet will be passing through that tail left over by that comet that has passed through. And in some cases, it can be quite dense. And so the peak activity, so the time when you can expect to see a lot of shooting stars, is when our planet is passing through the densest part of the stream of dust left.
How
by
far
that
up
comet.
Is that stream of dust?
It's in the what we call like the upper atmosphere. The dust is hitting our.
So it's relatively
atmosphere.
Close to Earth.
Because it's what we call a Halley-type comet. So its orbital period is actually quite small. 133 years is a really quite a small loop because a Halley-type comet has an orbital period between 20 and 200 years. So they're what we call the short-period comets. But obviously there are comets whose loops are much, much bigger. They can be hundreds and hundreds of years to thousands of years, and sometimes a comet can come into the solar system, swing around the sun. Sometimes they get swallowed up by the sun, but some of them actually make the passage, and they'll loop round and travel back out the solar system and probably never see them again because their orbital periods are immense, and they come from the darkest, deepest, coldest regions of the solar system. They're ostensibly big chunks of rock and ice, and as they approach the sun, they warm up, so their surfaces vaporize. So there we go. The Perseids is just one of a number of meteor showers that predictably happen throughout the year, because of course many comets pass through the solar system, and so at various times of the year Earth passes through their legacy tails as well. So you can expect to see more shooting stars in the night sky.
Oh wow, we kind of look forward to seeing some of that. I know I've made reference before to the Northern Lights, which are set much further forward. There are just so many different light shows to be seen in the sky, aren't there?
Yes, on a good night. I mean, on a good night, Tony, and summer's still a lovely time to be outside because, of course, it's warm. But on a really good, a good night without the moon being there, you not only do you have the lovely constellations, so the groupings of the stars, but you're always seeing satellite activity, sometimes artificial. In fact, a lot of artificial satellite activity. But there's always something to be seeing up there, and you will always see a shooting star.
Not forget the International Space Station as well, that goes over as
well.
That could be seen very brightly in the night sky on some nights.
And in the summer, it's often a lot brighter. So for any of your listeners who want to find out where to look and what time to see the space station passing over, they need to go to the website called heavens-above.com. And on there, if you type in your location, it will then drop down a list of dates and times to the second when you can expect to see the space station rising from the horizon, going over, and but it will only do so if you are able to see it in your area. So it's important that you put in your location, and then it will customize it and it will tell you whether you can see it. A lot of the time you can't, but when you can, it's stunning, absolutely stunning.
Oh, it is. It went over us the other night twice, and it's so bright in the summer because obviously the sun is in the northern hemisphere, and I'm guessing in the winter we don't see it so much because the sun is that much. Other side of the world, isn't it?
It's all to do with angles, really. Actually, Tony, the sun doesn't set that deeply in the summer, so it's, as you can see, it's never really that dark in the summer months. So that light hits the solar panels on these spacecraft and what we call flares them, so they brighten significantly. And it's all to do with the angles of the spacecraft and the angle of the sun below the horizon as well.
Yeah. To see it from the ground looks like a slab of tin foil, a very large slab of tin foil going across the sky. It's an absolutely wonderful sight to see.
It is. But it's as bright as Venus.
Very much so. Then you're talking about the sun in this time of year. I stood out in the garden the other night. It was only a couple of nights ago, I think, and there was a break in the sky, and there was a crescent moon, but it wasn't the normal white. It was a kind of a creamy, almost creamy yellow colour, where the sun was catching it.
Yeah, beautiful, isn't it?
A phenomenal sight.
Yep, the moon is lovely. It's just it gets in the way sometimes, a full moon in particular. And often, like last year, we had a full moon, so it ruined the Perseids meteor shower.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be there this year. It's in its last quarter phase on the 8th of August, and it's actually a new moon on the 16th, so that time in between from the night of the 12th of August and the 13th of August, which are the two best nights to be looking, we're not going to be pestered by a moon. So
we're not going to get a full moon around the 12th, that's around the 10th, is it?
Yeah, I'm not sure when the full moon is actually, but certainly the last quarter is on the 8th.
Yeah. Oh, well, it'll be interesting to see. So we'll keep an eye out for the Perseid meteor showers. And
the
say,
full
fortunately,
moon's
as you said,
Tony,
the full
moon is on the 1st of August.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because we're going to get two moons next month as well, which is very exciting.
Ah, that's why the moon in August. So we get it at the beginning, and then we're going to get one at the back end as well, are we?
We certainly are. We've got a full moon on the 1st at 7:30 in the evening. And then we've got another full moon on the 31st of August at 2:35 in the morning. And we're getting a super moon, Tony. Now, that's because the moon reaches what we call perigee, its closest point to Earth, on the 2nd of August at precisely 06:52 British Standard Time.
So that's going to be a big moon in the sky then.
That's when it's at its closest to Earth. And that's not long after full moon, obviously. That's the next day. So it's going to make it what we call a perigee full moon, also known as a supermoon, because it's a full moon, but it's at its closest point in Earth towards Earth as well. So it's going to appear a bit larger and a bit brighter than average. But in practice, it won't look a lot different to the full moons that you normally see, you know, either before or those that are going to follow it. But of course, then again, we get the second full moon on the 31st. And that one's going to be full, but just about 9¾ hours after perigee. So that's pretty close. So it's going to be close and it's going to be big and bright.
There certainly is already some very bright things to see in the sky in August. With the Perseids and the moon doing its thing in between, and the two things are actually not clashing, which is it's almost like somebody arranged that, isn't it?
Yes, if only.
Then also,
if they could arrange some clear skies at the same time, that would be perfect, wouldn't it?
It would. If you believe the weather people, we're going to see some warmer weather during August, which I would think would mean clearer skies, which, again, for the sake of what's going to happen around the middle of the month, is going to be a very good thing.
Yes.
So as long as it's not too hot and we get nice summer evenings, it's going to be a rather pleasant experience to get out there at night and actually look up in the sky.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, just looking up at the stars, they look beautiful. And the Milky Way at this time of year is absolutely glorious. I mean, you know, the Milky Way in the summer is really quite renowned. And that's because in the summer, of course, because Earth has moved another 6 months around the sun, we're looking towards the centre of the Milky Way. So it looks even more spectacular. And it really does. If any of your listeners have a pair of binoculars, just, you know, aim them in the direction of that arc of light that goes from one horizon to the other.
Yeah.
And you'll see that light and the dark areas in it as well are beautifully magnified in binoculars, and you'll see that there are hundreds of thousands of stars there, indeed millions, and they really do come to the fore in a pair of binoculars.
Yeah, you need to be in a really dark place to see this or to appreciate it, really.
You do, but you know, I've been even here where I am in the Sussex countryside, I've been out before in summer evenings, late in the evenings, looking up, and you give yourself a good 20 to 30 minutes for your eyes to adjust. Because then they'll dark adapt, so they'll get, you know, your pupils will open wider because, you know, they just allow more light in, and that will enable you to see an awful lot more. So give yourself 20 to 30 minutes and then look up, and you'll clearly see the Milky Way can be really quite refined. I mean, it's not as it's not as clear as you often see in pictures. I mean, you think you need to have to go down to somewhere like South America to do that, because obviously our light pollution is really quite bad. Even in the countryside, it's still quite bad. But even so, you know, the Milky Way is unmistakable, really is. And so scan your binoculars along that. You'll see all those myriad of stars. And, you know, threading through them are what we call the dark clouds. And they are these enormous clouds of gas and dust that will be the future material for making newborn stars.
Well, there you go.
Stunning.
Yeah, you see the future before your eyes.
You literally do.
Yeah. there is a follow-on question to that, really, because what we look at in the sky, it's been there a long time, hasn't it? And what you're looking at, because it takes so long to get the image, takes so long to get here. So in reality, what you're looking at as new, or you're thinking is new, was actually new a long time ago. Would that be right?
Oh, absolutely, yes. When you're looking at the stars, we are, you know, we're talking in light years, of course, because they're so far away. The closest star to us is about 4.5 light years away, and a light year is roughly a distance of about 6 trillion miles. So a star that's 4.5 light years away, that means it's, even though light can travel at covering 6 trillion miles in a year, it would still take 4.5 years for that light to reach you. So the star, the light from that star left that star 4.5 years ago. And that's how long it took. But of course, you know, the same applies to the sun.
Yes.
Obviously, you never look directly at the sun.
No.
But the light from the sun takes 8 minutes to reach the back of your eye.
Yeah, it's a bit different to 4.5 years.
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's very, very close, isn't it? But it's not close, of course, because it's 93 million miles away on average, which is, you know, a very throwaway comment, isn't it? But that's
It's further than anyone goes on their summer holidays anyway.
Well, yes.
That's one way of putting it. While we're on the subject of things in the night sky, we've talked about the moon, we've talked about the stars and the meteors. I haven't talked about the planets yet, and Saturn is coming to the fore in August.
Yes, Saturn is, really probably the feature planet of the month. And that's because it reaches opposition on the 27th of August, and that means that it's on the same side of the Sun as Earth is. So we get to see it all night long. And it's going to reach its highest position under relatively dark skies as well. So it can only improve as the month progresses. And a few days before opposition, the planet's rings themselves will exhibit a little bit of subtle brightening as well, and that's what we call the opposition effect. When you look at Saturn and it's not opposition, the shadows of the cast by the myriads of ring particles are actually visible. The shadows are visible, but at opposition, the shadows are reduced to a minimum, and that makes the rings appear even brighter. So you'd clearly see through a telescope that the rings themselves are brightening, and that will continue until the planet reaches opposition, and then after that, the rings start to slowly dim again.
Mm. Where in the night sky can we actually see this, or is it going to be in various different places during the course of the month?
Yes, you need to be looking south in the constellation of Aquarius. If anybody doesn't know what that looks like or where it is, just Google it and it will show you. You can always get night sky maps on the internet.
Yeah.
So just look location of Saturn and it will show you against a star map. So you'll know precisely where to look. And
it's also the rings. It's the rings. That's very, very exciting stuff, isn't it?
Yes, and at the moment, the planet's axis is actually tilted towards our planet by a little over about 8 degrees it is. So the North Pole is tilted towards us, and the rings are similarly tilted. So they actually appear quite thin. Anybody who observes Saturn over a few years will see that the rings get wider as it tilts towards and away in its orbit around the Sun. But they're quite thin at the moment.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be something to take a look at. So we've got three major things there to get out in the garden or outside at night to have a look at during August. We're talking the Perseid meteor showers. The moon is appearing twice in the night sky in August, once at the beginning and once at the end. And then Saturn is doing, well, I'm guessing the only way you can describe it is a ring dance, I think, really, so that we can actually see it in full motion and full view I'm guessing would you be able to do it with a pair of binoculars?
No, unless you've got a really, really large pair of binoculars, you can see that there's something there, that there's something that encircles the planet, but it's not clear in a pair of binoculars.
So for those that have the right viewing equipment,
you
can see the rings.
Yes, but even a small telescope will show the rings. And on a good night where the seeing is really steady, you can even see the gap between the rings as well. The newest gaps. You can see the largest one. It's really stunning.
On that exciting note, Jane, I think we shall call it a day, because I don't think we can top that for the month of August. So for now, Jane Green, thank you for talking to us today. And we will catch up with you in a month's time.
Lovely. Thanks, Tony.